south of the border.
Hi, everybody. I'm Johnny Mueller, and you're listening to The Expat Files, Living in Latin America, the show that tells you what it's really like to live, work, play, and or retire in Latin America. I tell it just like it is, not the version they give you in those glossy travel magazines, or the picture they paint for you in those international traveler websites, where they're only trying to sell you something. What's it really like for expats living in Latin America? Well, if you stick around a while, you'll find out. So, let's get started. Now, occasionally I get asked some very basic questions. Like, for example, how did Latin America become what we call third world? I mean, we invented that term third world now, didn't we? Latin Americans don't like to think of themselves in those terms. Who would? That's like admitting you have an inferiority complex now, isn't it? And for anybody who's ever been to a third world country, you see the obvious signs. You know, excessive litter, broken pavement, badly designed buildings and houses, stairs and doorways that are too narrow or too short, cracked windows that are never replaced, sidewalks and floors buckling, straight lines that aren't exactly straight, roads with curves that are not only way too tight for the average car, but with roller coaster style angles that you'd never see up in the first world. And a lot of first worlders might say that's because they just don't have the money to fix those windows, repair those roads, fix those stairways, and paint those walls. Well, that might be true in some cases, of course. But there's a basic cleanliness issue here that first worlders notice immediately every time they walk into a kitchen or a bathroom. Yet the local Latins seem oblivious to what's painfully obvious to us expats. And there's no apologies. Apologies for what? You can't apologize for something you just don't notice. And God forbid you walk into a public bathroom, where 99% of those are in much worse shape than Samson the silverback gorilla's cage at the Chicago Zoo. Not to mention Samson's cage smells better. So, the issue of basic cleanliness is not necessarily about the money. We all know Spartan low-budget people up in the first world whose house is so neat and clean you could eat off the floor. Not a smudge on the wall, a stain on the counter, or even a hair from the dog on the furniture. My grandma's house was like that. In fact, I think everyone's got a grandma who had a house like that. And that kind of old-world European-style cleanliness is not about money, but elbow grease and persistence. But you don't see that kind of attitude down here, no matter how many cleaning ladies you hire. The fact is, when they clean, they just don't move anything. They don't move the bed, the refrigerator, the stove, or even bother with the cobwebs in the corner. And I can tell you right now, even when a wealthy Latin buys a brand new house, in 6 months, it's pretty rough around the edges. And the first thing that me and a lot of expats notice when we walk into a relatively new house are those telltale finger smudges on all the light switch plates. Up in the first world, that's just unacceptable. There's no excuse for grubby switch plates like that. But what's worse, in Latin American households, rich and poor, oftentimes you'll go to switch on a light, but the cover plate will be missing, completely gone, and you'll see the wires inside the wall attached to the switch. Now, what's a plastic switch cover plate like that cost at a hardware store? 50 cents? I don't get it, and neither do a lot of other expats. That just doesn't happen in the States. Unless, of course, you live in a white trash trailer park or ghetto housing. And in those places, there's kind of a rustic tradition of entropy and slackness that's been going on for generations. Kind of like the way things are done with the common folk down here in Latin America. Like I said, us expats just don't get it. Obvious smudges are something you could take off with a squirt of Windex and a rag in about 10 seconds. And you'd think the cleaning ladies down here would have that in their bag of tricks, right? Wrong. I mean, they call them cleaning ladies. That's what they do for a living. So why aren't they cleaning? Which brings me back to those email questions I get occasionally asking me how Latin America got that way. Why does it persist as a third world society when there are so many simple, cheap, and even sometimes absolutely free ways to spiff up the place and bring it to a higher level? Because here's my point. Often, first world people that come down here make a general observation and say to me, after seeing a house or a business that's scruffy around the edges like that, that just needs a little elbow grease to make it shine, they say to me, I don't get it, Johnny. Are these people just lazy? Or what? And gringo visitors and expats I know have tons of examples. Here's one I've heard time and time again. You walk into a paint store, and there's five workers standing around, leaning on a countertop, and the walls in the place are all scuffed up and dirty, with ground-in fingerprint and hand grit around all the light switches and the door frames. And in this place, the staff is standing around doing nothing, and it's a store that sells paint. Kind of the definition of third world, don't you think? So again, a lot of first world people want to know, are the people just lazy or what? And that question does go through every expat's mind who's thinking about opening a business down here. He's thinking about the quality of the workforce. And if the locals are intrinsically lazy and are on mañana time, expats who have an idea to open a business down here are understandably leery, since the whole point is to provide customer service first world style, something that's sorely lacking down here in Latin businesses. I mean, if the employees are truly lazy and on mañana time, you're going to be beating your head against the wall at every turn. But here's the thing. When talking to many successful expats down here who've set themselves up in a first world style business, they all tell me that Latins are not lazy or slow by nature. Not at all. It's just that when left to their own devices, they're Olympic grade procrastinators. We all know people like that up in the first world too. They put off tomorrow, which should be done today, and they keep procrastinating till things break down and deteriorate to such a point that there are no cheap or simple fixes anymore. And that's why us first world people perceive that Latins live in a bit of a cloud of chaos and disorder, and the funny thing is they're not really aware of it and are actually quite comfortable living that way. For example, here's something that happens to me all the time. I get invited to a local Latin person's house for dinner or a party or whatever. And the man or the woman of the house will say, "Hey, I want to show you something." And they'll take me into a room and they'll say, "Look what I just bought, a brand new plasma TV." And there it sits in the corner, brand new, right out of the box, the centerpiece of the room. And then the owner, proud as punch, will take the remote and flick through a bunch of channels for me. That's when I notice that the channels aren't exactly clear, but actually kind of fuzzy and indistinct. Nothing near the high definition we're used to up in the first world. Not even close. More like 1960s style reception when people used to use rabbit ears on their TV. And if you remember rabbit ears, you're really an old fart. Anyway, as I walk closer to the TV and look at the back side of it, it's pretty obvious that the reason for that terrible reception is that rat's nest of wires back there, loops and coils of antenna cable so old that the plastic insulation is actually cracking, peeling, and pulling away from some sections of the wire. But do you think that worried the owner of that brand new TV? Not a bit. Not only was the bad reception issue not a problem, it wasn't on the radar, since the whole point of that exercise was to show me that brand new big screen TV. It didn't matter to him if the picture looked like crap. It was all about the new TV. On the payment plan, of course. And another notorious example of third world style that's patently oblivious to the Latin population, but blatantly obvious to us, is directly connected to the fact that a huge percentage of Latins build their houses and structures, including their businesses, in fits and spurts. So they'll build a couple of rooms, run out of money, then of course there's a big gaping hole or archway leading to the rest of the structure that's not built yet, but that won't stop a guy from opening up his business. They'll just hang a plastic tarp over that opening or lean something against it like a big piece of paneling or stack some blocks and building material on the floor next to it to stop most of the rain and the wind from blowing into the store. So as you walk around and examine the businesses in any Latin American city, and for that matter the houses too, you can see all those telltale signs on how they were built in fits and spurts when a guy abruptly stops construction in midstream and all his workers go home. It's because he's completely run out of money and he's bone dry. And it often takes 6 months, a year, or even more, and believe it or not, sometimes never, before that second phase of the project gets going. That second phase being, of course, the completion of the first phase, which never got finished in the first place. But here's what happens in between the time Latins run out of money, stop a construction project, then wait till they have enough money so they can start up again. Well, almost inevitably, that second phase looks like a completely different structure from the first. Most times, there's very little congruency, and in fact, even though that new construction is intimately connected with the walls, doors, floors, and ceilings of the first phase, they almost never get tile, wood, or fixtures that match the first phase of the project because a year or two after the initial construction, the same finish and detail products are just not available anymore. So they go down to the local building construction and supply and just buy what's ever cheap or on sale and start building again. And from a first world perspective, this is completely nuts, though you see it down here all the time. You walk into a house or a business, and you see three or four different kinds of tile on the floor that don't match at all, neither in color, style, or texture. The same with the walls and ceilings. You'll see drywall that changes to block, that changes to wood, and back to drywall again, sometimes all in the same space or room. And it's not unusual to go into a bathroom and see seven or eight different kinds of tile, a porcelain sink whose color doesn't match the toilet, whose color doesn't match the bathtub. Not to mention the infinite variety of light fixtures, all colors, shapes, and sizes too, that you often find in just one single house or business. And that, again, for a first world person, would define the words white trash, trailer court, fashion sense, or third world. And of course, there's hundreds more examples, but those are some of the more obvious ones that come to mind. But what besides the obvious shortage of money, as well as an excess of bad taste, tend to keep a region or a country forever labeled third world? And by the way, it's not just me. I'm sorry to say that 99% of expats I know will confirm the bad taste assumption. Anyway, there is one thing you find out about Latin people when you're down here long enough. You realize there's just no pressure on them to do things any other way. But when you put them into an environment and give them a structure and give them a plan, it's absolutely true that they can do their work up to first world standards every time. But they just need to have order and organization in their lives, something they just don't get while growing up. And let me give you a good example here. Now, everybody knows that kids are supposed to learn by example from their parents at home and at school from their teachers. And even if their own parents aren't much of an example, once they've seen the right way to do things at school and have been given some kind of foundation, they should be able to go out into the world as adults and perform, right? Well, here's the problem with that. Down here in Latin America, about 95% of the kids go to public school. Those are government-run and operated public schools. And those private schools down here in Latin America, which are always way too expensive for the average parent who makes $300 a month, well, that's why only 5% or less of the kids can go to those private schools. And nearly all of those private schools try to be first world in every way. And some even have first world teachers on the staff. So private school kids are given a pretty good dose of first world values. Like, for example, first world style organizational skills. And the schools even look like first world schools inside and out. But those other kids, the poor kids, those 95% that go to the public school, well, that's a completely different story. Because you see, if those schools and the teachers at those schools are supposed to provide the example before those kids are sent out into the world as adults, well, you can see by just walking into one of those classrooms why the society is like it is, why Latin America is third world. I know this must sound strange to you, but every day in the big city newspapers, there are public school teachers on strike. And they're not striking for more benefits or higher pay. They're striking because the kids and the classrooms do not have the basics. And I don't mean the basics like we have up in the first world public schools, like computers and science labs and fully equipped gymnasiums and swimming pools and hot lunches. Those things are unheard of down here in the public schools and aren't even on the radar yet. I'm talking about 19th century school basics, like books and desks and even running water in the bathrooms. And sometimes the school hasn't had electric power for a week or two. Not to mention the fact that at any given time, there are hundreds of Latin American school districts where teachers have not got a paycheck for over 3 months. And in fact, a few years ago when I was in Nicaragua, I noticed that at every checkout in every little grocery store, there was a little donation bucket for a kind of a school drive. It was a national program to collect money, get this, to buy pencils for the kids at public school because the government did not have enough money to buy the kids pencils. They had nothing to write with. Not to mention, they only had enough books for 1 in 3 kids going to public school that year. And the kids were doubling and tripling up on desks. So my point is this, when you're brought up as a child under those conditions, no pencils, no desks, water and power shortages, broken windows, zero maintenance, with most government school buildings so run down and dilapidated that if they were up in the first world, they'd have been condemned and demolished a long time ago. Anyway, if a kid's brought up under those conditions day in and day out, and he thinks and believes that's just the way things are, when he gets to be an adult and gets his own place, do you really think he's going to get bent out of shape or even notice at all if there's a tile mismatch in the bathroom or the kitchen, or that there's finger smudges on the light switch? I don't think so. So to them, it's completely normal, and to us, it's third world. So what I'm saying is Latin people are not lazy or slow. But know this when you hire one. They really do want to work for a first world person like you in a big way. And they know that they can learn a lot more from you than they could ever learn from a Latin employer. And I have to believe that it's kind of a third world inferiority complex that almost every Latin you meet seems to have. And of course, it's part of our gringo advantage. Because let's face it, not all of us are working at Boeing designing jet engines, are we? In fact, a lot of us first world gringos are lazy ass doofuses ourselves. In fact, I've had a few friends and family members like that myself. Guys I'd never want to hire, that's for sure. Anyway, Latins have a kind of inferiority complex about being third world, which, like I said, is part of our gringo advantage and why they love everything and anything first world, which includes working for a first world boss if they ever had the opportunity. But something like that's a statistical impossibility for most of them, except, of course, in those gringo tourist areas like Panama and Costa Rica. But believe me, in the rest of Latin America, that 98% that's off the gringo tourist track, most expats with businesses will tell you that their Latin workers are top-notch. Of course, they don't walk into the job day one top-notch. You have to sort of deprogram them and start from scratch. But once they've learned the way you want them to do things, you're off and running. But know this, unless they worked for a first-world franchise before they came to your interview, where they were nicely whipped into shape, they'll have some bad third-world work habits, which is why you just can't sit down and tell them what to do. You have to write it all out. Give them a list. They have to have a pattern to follow, something they can refer back to day in and day out when you're not there. Actually, what you need is a detailed employee handbook in Spanish. You've all heard of an employee handbook now, haven't you? You know, a book that describes the company, everyone's job, and everyone's function, so that when someone gets fired or he leaves, a new employee's not just dropped into the fire, but has a very good guide to go by. Well, guess what? Down here in Latin America, when it comes to local businesses owned and operated by Latins, I've never seen a real live employee handbook, which is light years apart from the way they do things up in the first world. Up there, every company's got a handbook that's at least an inch thick, which explains every possible scenario for every type of employee in the place. That's exactly what they're for. And every new employee is supposed to get a copy of it, and from it, learn his role in the business before he even punches in on day one. But like I said, employee handbooks just don't exist down here. Only in those transplanted first world franchises like Subway, Home Depot, and Sears. And by the way, do you think Sears, Subway, Home Depot, and IHOP would be down here if they thought the employees were irredeemably lazy and slow? No way. They know that Latins are as sharp as anybody in the first world, but they also know they have to be divested of their bad habits, or the business will slowly start to get ragged around the edges, which is something that locals aren't likely to notice, but expats can see coming from a mile away. Like, for example, that mañana mentality everybody talks about. And I tell you, even the locals admit that's what it's like down here. And that's why, like I said, if you have a rigid, tight schedule or list for your employees, they won't have time to put things off till mañana. And like my friend expat Eddie says, who's got maybe 100 employees or so in the food service in Salvador. Now, Eddie tells me that most of his employees have a particular list they have to follow, and every item has to be completed and checked off before the shift is over and they can go home. And Eddie says for his first restaurant in the first couple months, and that was 8 or 9 years ago, he had the list down pat, and his employees were supposed to follow it, but they never seemed to be able to finish it on time. So the end of the shift would come, and they'd go home and come back the next day, and they'd start out having to finish things on the list that they hadn't finished the day before. So they'd just get farther and farther behind. And after tearing his hair out a while, Eddie figured out a pretty good solution to his problem. At least that's what he thought. And that was, of course, instituting some incentives for his employees to make a bit more money. And here's how it worked. First of all, the biggest problem that Eddie had as an employer was that his people just did not come in on time. And they had 1,000 excuses. The bus was late. It broke down. There was too much traffic. There was an accident on the highway. And one guy's grandma died 3 times. All kinds of excuses. In the beginning, Eddie had about 10 employees, and here's what he did. He had a meeting with his staff, and he said, "Look, I'm going to put a time clock in, and if any one of you is 1 minute late, I'm going to dock you 1 hour's pay." Well, he ran that system for a couple of months, and guess what? Nothing changed. His employees not only didn't mind being docked an hour's pay, they actually came in later. Instead of 10 or 20 minutes late, they'd come in 40 or 50 minutes late, because it didn't matter if they were 1 minute or 59 minutes late, they'd still get docked just an hour's pay. So when they were late, they'd try to shoot for that 59 minutes. Hey, like I said, Latins aren't stupid. Anyway, then Eddie had another meeting with his employees, and he said, "Look, if you're 1 minute late, I'm going to dock you 2 hours instead of one." But after a week, he reversed that decision because 3 of his employees quit. So once things were up and running again, he had another meeting, and here's what he did. This time, he tried a completely different tactic, using a carrot instead of a stick. And here's what he did. He had a meeting, and he said, "Look, I've got 10 employees, and here's what I'm going to do. At the end of every month, I'll give the person who's got perfect attendance and who's never been late in the morning $100. And I'll do that every month." And Eddie said that caused a lot of excitement in the moment, and everybody was gung-ho for that. Since back then, about 7 or 8 years ago, Eddie was only paying his people about $200 a month, so a $100 bonus was 2 weeks' salary. Quite a prize for anyone making only $200 a month. And you know, Eddie told me when he sprung that idea on his people, he was a little worried inside. He was thinking, what happens if all 10 of these guys show up on time? Then he'd be out $1,000, which Eddie said at the time would have wiped out about half of his own salary. But he figured he'd give it a chance and see what would happen. And guess what? For about the first 2 weeks, everybody was on time and nobody was sick. Then, little by little, here and there, people would be late by 2 or 3 minutes. Then they'd actually come to Eddie and whine about it, giving the same old excuses about the traffic or an accident or about the weather or a breakdown. But this time, Eddie could see in their eyes that they weren't lying. No dead grandmas this time. Anyway, into the third week of the test, there was only one person left in the running. And by the fourth week, the girl won $100. So for Eddie, it worked out pretty good. His people had the best attendance record that they'd ever had. However, the next month didn't work out so well. The same girl that won the $100 before was maintaining her perfect streak, which seemed to discourage the rest of the employees enough, so they all sloughed off and dropped out of the competition early. And at month's end, the same girl won again. And Eddie realized the scheme was starting to backfire. He didn't want this girl to win every month. He wanted a kind of a horse race, and he knew now he wasn't going to get it. And then Eddie hit on the solution. In the next month, he decided to give out 3 prizes of $50 each to the top 3 winners. And from then on, he didn't have any problem with his people coming in late. And the thing is, after about 6 months or so of that, once his employees were now in the groove of coming on time or even early for a change, he switched over his incentive system to that schmaltzy, if somewhat embarrassing to me, employee of the month thing, which he said he borrowed from Walmart. And he insists that no matter how schmaltzy it seems to us, his Latin employees just love it. He says they're just nuts about having their picture up on a bulletin board for all their friends and relatives to see. And Eddie actually thinks for Latins it's a better incentive than money. And he should know. So the point is, like Eddie says, first world incentives and methods work just as well with local employees as they do with people up in the first world. However, you got to start with the basics and break people of their bad habits. And that's why Eddie says he likes to hire people who don't have any previous work experience so that he can start fresh with them and he doesn't have to butt his head against their bad habits. Oh, and speaking of bad employee habits, Eddie says one of the worst habits his employees have is that when he's not there, they look for any chance to make a phone call with his phone. That way they can make the call on his dime instead of theirs. And another bad worker habit that Eddie talks about is the fact that things go missing all the time. And he's not talking about money now, because he's got a very good system of control for the register. And who's ever in charge of it at the end of the shift has to tally up the receipts with the cash, and if things don't square, that person has to kick in. So people are very cautious with the money in Eddie's business. But he says things go missing like toilet paper, forks and knives, bottles of ketchup, kitchen utensils, things like that. So now Eddie does what almost every expat businessman does, and he has his people open their purses or bags in front of the guard for his inspection before they leave. And Eddie, his manager, and the guard have the option to frisk a worker or check pockets if they feel it justified. And of course, that's written into the employee manual and part of the employee agreement or contract that Eddie makes him sign when he hires them. And a few years ago, when Eddie first enacted that policy, Eddie felt a little strange about it and never would do it himself. He'd leave that to the guard because he didn't want to seem like the enemy. But he said after a few weeks, it seemed like old hat to his employees and they just whip open their bags and give a polite buenos noches and be on their way, as happy and as upbeat as ever. And by the way, expat Eddie reports the same thing that my friends who own the maquilas and sweatshops down in Guatemala and Honduras report to me about their Latin employees. And here's what they all say. That Latin men, though great workers once you've got them trained, can be a big problem for your women workers. Because after all, this is a macho society, and men almost always go unpunished for their misdeeds, rude remarks, and infractions against women. I mean, down here in Latin America, a girl just can't walk down the street alone without 1,000 catcalls and comments from the local wolves. And woe be the lady that wears a short skirt or shows a little cleavage when walking down the street. When some girl tries that, she's just asking for trouble. And that's why one of the greatest traumas in a young Latin lady's life is having to ride the bus, which 95% of them just have to do because they don't have the money to take a taxi, much less buy a car, even a junk. The fact is, every young Latin girl can tell you dozens of stories on how she's been touched and handled and patted on the butt, whistled to and blown kisses at, all from low-class guys she wouldn't walk on the same side of the street with. But she's got to sit or stand right next to these guys every time she takes a bus. And that's why every young Latin woman that I've ever talked to puts marriage in a car at the top of her wish list, with the car number one. And though nearly all Latin women end up getting married at one time or another, almost none of them ever get that car. Because you see, the available males in the dating and marriage pool only make what she makes, about $300 a month. So even if they combine their incomes, there's still rent and food and utilities, and not nearly enough to even buy a junker. And that's assuming they don't have any kids. And they all end up having a few, which makes the financial situation even worse. Now, thinking about what I just said about cars, buses, and Latin women, you male expats up there who've been disappointed in love in the first world are probably thinking that that's part of the gringo advantage that I really haven't talked about much before now, have I? Because, you know, every gringo and expat I've ever known has had a car, or two or three, because that's just part of our lifestyle. Now, don't get me wrong, I'm not saying that a Latin girl would love to hook up with a gringo because she knows she can get a car out of him, or for that matter, a green card. But the fact is, every expat down here that does hook up with the Latin girl makes sure she has a car or a taxi, or he drives her everywhere himself, because he never wants her to ride the bus. So just know that that's one scenario where a stereotype about gringos is absolutely true. That is, when we do hook up with a Latin lady, we make sure she gets a car. And the point is, it doesn't have to be new or even late model. It could be a junker. You see, you've saved her from riding that bus, so you're her knight in shining armor. Because now you've allowed her to avoid all that humiliation that goes on in those buses. Not to mention the occasional robbery that so many Latin girls report while riding those buses. When bad guys in a crowded bus slip a knife into a girl's purse to extract her wallet and her cell phone. And believe me, that's a full-time job for a lot of these bad boys. And they're very stealthy and really good at it. And for them, the more crowded the bus, the better. So, for all you expat wannabes up there, that's another part of the gringo advantage. I know it's in a lot of first world guys' minds that a young Latin girl just might want to hook up with you because there's always that possibility of getting a green card and with your help getting that visa to the States. And of course, there are some Latin girls who think that way. But I'm saying it's a lot simpler than that. Getting a green card and going to the States is way down the list of a Latin girl's fantasies. But getting a car, well, that's right up on top of the list. As a rule, Latin girls aren't out to get a green card from you. Though the reverse is almost always true. Latin guys are looking for that green card from a gringa. Anyway, when you're outside the tourist areas, girls aren't looking for green cards. But in the tourist areas, that's another story altogether. Girls in Costa Rica, Panama, and throughout Mexico, a lot of girls who've been jaded by the U.S. dollar are looking for that green card. There's no doubt of that. But here's my point. In 98% of the rest of Latin America, when you're off the tourist trail, like I always recommend, the statistics are this. Only about 1 in 20 Latin people have ever actually been face-to-face with a gringo or actually spoke with one. The fact is, off the tourist trail, we're as rare as a full set of teeth at a Willie Nelson concert. Many times I've walked all day long in a big Latin city without seeing a single gringo. So, you tell me, with those kinds of rare odds, how can Latin girls in these gringo-free areas ever hope to have the possibility of hooking up with one of us for a green card when only about 5% of them have ever actually spoken a single word to one of us? So, the bottom line is this. The average young Latin lady's dreams are small. She wants a man that won't drink and abuse her, she wants a family, and she wants a car. And if you notice, there's no green card on that list. Oh, and remember that star employee I told you about that worked for Expat Eddie? The girl that won that $100 bonus 2 months running because she was never late and didn't miss a day of work? Eddie's incentive plan paid off because he found the girl to manage 10 of his restaurants. And yes, one of her fantasies did come true. She just bought her own car.
South of the border, down Mexico way.
You've been listening to The Expat Files, living in Latin America, coming to you each week from somewhere south of the border. And don't forget, you can email me on anything at all about Latin America, theexpatfiles@gmail.com. Once again, theexpatfiles@gmail.com. See you next time. Nos vemos.